Hello, my name's Tamsin Wessel and welcome to Fresh from the Pod Gardening Stories. Now, I wanted to kickstart the year with someone that would motivate us, get us excited about spring and summer and all the wonderful possibilities that gardening brings. So who better than the wonderful allotment gardener, Rekha Mistry? Now, she's only been actually gardening on her allotment for 9 years. She's a career changer. And boy, has she made an impact. She's inspired so many of us with her blogs and columns and Instagram posts. So I think you're all going to be revved up and raring to go after my conversation with Rekha Mistry. Rekha, it's fantastic to see you. The listeners can't see this, but I'm wearing dungarees.
Oh, look, and today I'm not wearing one. Ah. My favourite.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought I've got to get those out of the wardrobe today and put my dungarees on, specially for you.
Oh, damn. Like, if I had known, I would have put mine on.
Bit of fun. Now, I wanted to have you as my first guest for 2021 on Fresh from the Pod because I think we all need a lift. We all need something practical to do. And your Instagram and your blog has helped so many people to get motivated and grow their own and cook.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't always see it that way, but thank you.
Oh, gosh, it's fantastic. It's so colourful, your Instagram posts. So whatever time of year, you manage to inject some colour. So thank you for that.
I think that's what's needed. At this time of the year, you really need something to brighten up your mind. It's just not what you want to do. It's just how you're going to do it. And you need to see the bigger picture in the dull light. You really need to see what you want to do later on, because it's very hard to motivate yourself when it's dull and grey and nothing to look at in the garden. So you really need to have a diary, so to speak. So it's your phone is your diary, your pictures are your diary, and that's what you look at. Just go back to the year and see what you want to do, what you want to change, and you'll see the colour, and that might just inspire you again to start again.
Yeah, and to get going. Because now you're a fascinating person because you're a career changer and you started your allotment story, 8, 9, 10 years ago? So not long ago.
About nine years ago, 2011.
And what got you going? What was the sort of the thing?
The idea to an allotment was always, I've always wanted one. The children used to go, when they used to go to school, there was an allotment next to the school. And that, I thought, this is perfect. This is something I'd like to get hold of. And I spoke to somebody there. His name was Ian. And he goes, just go for it. Just have an allotment. Your kids are in school. You can have an allotment here next to the school. And when they finish, you can go home with them. And the idea stuck in my head. I couldn't do it. You know, I had a business and I couldn't just have an allotment just like that. But the idea stuck in my head for a very long time. And it's only when the youngest went to secondary school and I didn't have to do a taxi run or anything like that, I thought, okay, I can look into this. And because it takes, 4 or 5 years to get a plot at times? But that's what I always heard about. I put my name down and got a plot within 3 months of putting my name down. I thought, okay, this is a bit too fast for me. I was waiting for maybe 4 years, I'll be ready for one. But I think it was the best thing, you know, just go head in and get a plot which is just overrun with weeds and just try, you know, just that. That's all it was try and see if I can do what Ian, who told me what to do, I can do. And that's where it went from. And the love just carried on.
And you've got no growing experience before. I mean, did your parents garden? What was your sort of guiding hand?
Right. So my background is I'm born and brought up in Zambia, and my mum had a beautiful veg garden there. They've now moved to India, but she still recalls all her memories from her garden. But we used to help her do the gardening, as in you should say, right, go and do some weeding there or go and do the watering. And that's all we used to do. It's not like we knew what we were doing. We were just doing because she asked us to do it. And she used to grow a lot of her heritage veg, which is like the Indian vegetables. So
yes,
I've always grown up knowing those kind of things could grow in Africa as well as in India. And that's where the love of gardening has always stuck in me. It's just the joy of seeing plants. Whether I knew I was going to do it, I don't know. You know, it's just something that stayed in my head.
But of course.
And that has always stayed in me. And when I came to this country, I thought, I'll do it. But having a small back garden and children growing up, they need the garden space to play in. So I couldn't encroach into it. And when I did start growing things in the garden, I'd always say, right, please don't play with your ball over there. You know, you're going to break my plants and whatnot. So they always said to me, Mom, you do know there's an allotment next to the school. Why don't you get one? And that sort of, you know, that just snowballed from there on. That's the end of that story. And that's where this is now.
Yeah, I mean, what's amazing is obviously growing up where there's much warmer climate,
Yeah. You've
thrown yourself into our dreadful...
into the coldest climate I could think of. It still takes me a while to get used to cold, but I'm used to it. I can work it outdoors. I'm fine with it.
It's hilarious. Yeah, it couldn't be more extreme, could it, really, as we all sit here in our woolly jumpers. Now, I first saw you on the television, BBC, The Allotment Challenge in 2015.
That's right.
Now, how crazy of you to put your name forward for that, because it was actually quite... I mean, it was incredibly demanding, wasn't it? For those people that didn't see it, you were given a plot with, I think it was probably ten other people, and you had to get it up to speed, didn't you?
Yes.
What were you thinking?
I don't know what I was thinking. I thought it'd be a walk in the park, and it wasn't. It's nothing like that. It's nothing like your own allotment. It's really regimented, so to speak. And there's one thing I learned from that program is timing. When you grow your own vegetables, you don't think of timing, but when you do it for a contest, you have to have that vegetable ready for that week. You were told when to present a certain vegetable, so you needed to know when to start growing it. And that is something I learned. I thought, oh, okay, so I need to, you know, train my vegetables, do I now? That's not something I've learned to do, but it's something that made me learn that, right, certain things, you need certain timing. And timing came into the pattern of growing.
Yeah. I mean, I just think you're remarkable, because you had to grow cut flowers. Then you had to cook things as well.
Yeah. I mean, the cooking side of it is normal for me, because I do it anyway. That wasn't the daunting part. I think my flowers were still my daunting part. I don't like to arrange flowers. I like to grow them. I don't like to arrange them. I like to see them just the way they are in natural beauty. So when you still ask me to cut flowers, I'm still like, please don't. I'll grow them.
Yeah.
Happily, but don't ask me to cut them unless they're dead.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm glad you're not good at everything. So that makes us all feel a lot better. That's great. So after that, I mean, were you still working then?
Yes.
What was the sort of thing that made you jump from, you know, a proper job as such to becoming a gardener and a garden writer?
When we sold our business, I always said, I don't want to stop. That's not something I wanted. I want to carry on. And the gardening side has always been in my mind. I really want to pursue it if I can. The writing side seemed to have come as a shock for me. I didn't think I would do writing. I've always wanted to be a gardener in a professional capacity. So I had to think about it, saying, what do I need to do? So I've started doing the RHS level 2,
yes,
which I'm nearly completing. And so that has helped me look at the bigger picture of gardening. Where do I go? What do I do? And I volunteered in a temple.
Yes, in London.
Garden in London. And that opened my eyes. And I knew I wanted to work in a place like that. Not particularly that place, but somewhere like that, because I loved the idea of learning ornamental side of it. Though I knew the veg side of it, I wanted to know the ornamental side of things. And that opened my eyes in such a large way that I thought that is where I'm going to go, nowhere else. And then the writing came along.
Kitchen Gardener, wasn't it?
Kitchen Garden magazine is the first who said, would you like to write for us? And that took me by surprise. I thought, why me? You know, I've not written before. But they say, you do write. You write in the Facebook. Your blogs are really well written, and people engage with you. And I think you know how to engage with the public. Somehow you seem to know. So can you just write for us, whatever you wish to write? And we came up with the concept of a diary. A monthly diary, what I do in a month. And it took off from there. And now I'm writing for Gardener's World, which is a different way of writing, but it's still writing. And it's fun. It really is fun. But with Gardener's World and not with Kitchen Garden magazine is the recipe side of it. It's all about seasonal.
Yes.
It's all about a seasonal crop. How I still do my work in Facebook and blog and Instagram is all about seasonal. You'll never see me growing or talking about strawberries in the deepest, darkest months of December. They'll never come up in my, unless it's a jam.
Right.
You'll see the jam come up. But that's how I do it, is always seasonal work. That's how I write for Gardener's World, is all seasonal, but with a recipe. So it's lovely to be challenged to make something specially for people to see. It's not just an ordinary recipe I would do all the time. I come up with something completely different. And even I wow myself on that.
But, you know, I love the fact that, and I think this is what we're all going to learn this year compared mm-hmm. to last year. A lot of people started gardening and growing their own last year, and they sort of randomly thought, oh, I'll grow some spinach, I'll grow some peppers. They didn't think it through, and I'm guilty of this, as to what you're going to cook with it.
Yeah.
So this is where your instructions are really clear as to why am I growing this? What am I going to do with it? How am I going to store it?
Yeah.
And I was looking last night at your blogs. It was the root veg burgers, I think, I'm going to have a go at.
Oh, the beetroot burgers.
Yes, they sound lovely. So it almost starts with your taste buds, doesn't it? And you yes. work backwards in a way.
Yes.
So when you're planning your veg gardening for next year, like we're all surrounded by seed catalogues, mm-hmm. where do you start? Where would you recommend we start?
You start with what you like to eat. That's the first thing. So like I said, like you've just mentioned, burger. You like a burger. What do you need for that burger? You need the vegetables that will hold the patty.
Yeah.
Which is usually the roots. It's always the root vegetables that hold the consistency. And that's where you work backwards. You could even make it from parsnips. You could make it from turnips or swede. It's those. And do I like those vegetables? You may not, but you might want to grow one of them and see if you like it. I've never grown it before. I've never eaten it before. I never grew up with those vegetables, but I'm trying them, and we all try it as a family. And I try and make something so different that you'll think, okay, actually it is a nice vegetable and we can eat it. So the other one I've never eaten was turnips. You know, when I grew up, I never had turnips. And that's something I've learned to like, because you try and place a vegetable into the food you like. So it could be a soup. You know, you'd never think of saying, let's add spinach into soup. But you can add spinach into soup. It's not just for a salad. You can make something different from what you want it to be. It's all about experimenting with the taste buds. And that's, you work backwards. Don't just get all the seeds in the world, but grow them to your taste.
Okay, and do you plan your plot? So do you sort of mark out, right, I'm going to grow this here this year, that up here next year? Or are you sort of quite chaotic and just fit things in where you go and as you go?
No, I tend to use the rotation method.
Okay.
So everything, like the brassicas, are grown in one section and then they're rotated to the next section. So the potatoes are all grown in one section. So it's all about pest control organically as much as you can. Just try and just move your pests around, so to speak. You know, just don't let them get lazy and stay in one place. You know, just let them work as well.
Keep them fit. Yeah, come on.
You know, just move around. But that's how I grow. But I do have a plan. I usually say, right, I'll grow this here and I'll grow that there. And half the time that just goes out of the window. But when I say brassicas stay in one bed, they stay in that one bed. So that all the brassicas will be crammed, jammed into one place if I have to. But that's how I do it. It's always on a rotation.
Okay. What I loved, you appeared in September on Gardener's World.
Oh, yeah.
On the allotment.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic. And that was when I really sort of thought, gosh, you are pushing the boundaries with what you're growing.
Yeah.
And your allotment's in Harrow, isn't it? So it's,
yes.
And you were growing things like turmeric.
Yes, I've been growing that for about three, four years now. Turmeric and garlic is, turmeric and ginger are the two things I've been growing for a while. I just like to try it. And I even tried peanuts.
Ooh.
three or four years ago.
How did that go?
That went well. I mean, I got four out of one
peanuts. Who ate them? Did you fight over them in the house?
Well, four whole nuts, and then you get two in each. So that was good. But I was quite proud of myself. I thought, wow, I didn't know how they grew. I didn't know how the plants look. I mean, I grew up in Africa. And I should know this. And it was all around me, and I never knew how they grew. And it was so amazing. Every time a flower came through, I said, oh, it's got lovely flowers. There'll be roots underneath. And I had to message my mum, and my mum said to me, my dear, it's that flower is going to go down into the ground, and that's where it's going to come through. I said, I never knew that. I said, I need to let it dangle. She goes, make sure it dangles right to the soil, and that's when it will grow into a peanut. And that's just fascinating.
But I mean, this is half the fun of it. This is what's got us through this dreadful year, is experimenting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having things to talk about other than, you know, world news. You know, your peanuts, that's given you some entertainment, some joy, some more knowledge. So I think it's more than just growing food to eat, isn't it, what you
do?
That's
right. Just try and grow something you buy in a supermarket. You can grow something out of it. So say watercress. You can grow your own watercress from a bag of watercress that you buy. Just take them out and you'll notice if you pick up any stem, you will notice roots on it because it grows horizontally, not vertically.
So what do you do with it? Do you put it in?
So just as soon as you get it, take the longest stems out and put them in water. Just start feeding them the water because it's watercress. You know, the name
gives
says
it away.
It. And then put it in some soil. But make sure that the pot is always got water, fresh water applied to it. And you'll be amazed how much watercress you can get from a few plants.
Gosh, I'm going to try that. That sounds great fun. But I mean, what I love about you is that it strikes me that you're self-taught. I know you're doing your RHS, but you are an experimenter. And I think I picked up from the allotment challenge that you're quite competitive, aren't you, with your growing?
I'm not. I am.
She is. Yeah, I thought, oh, now she wants to win this.
There was a lot of things going on at the time, and I didn't really participate as I should have done. There was a lot of family things going on, so I didn't push myself as I should have. But it actually gave me more thought of what I wanted to do. It wasn't just about winning the challenge. It was more about what I wanted to end up doing. So when I did leave, I thought, you know, I really want to do this RHS course, but they've been talking about, because there was a gardener who was looking after us there and she had done it. And she told me that you should do it. If you really want to do work in a garden, you should do it. I think certain words stay in your mind and you want to push that boundary. Can I do it? And so it was never about winning the challenge. That would have been nice. That would be the really nice icing on the cake. But Rob, dear friend of mine now, he's great. He does the championing for a lot of things as well.
So that's Rob Smith, and he's on Instagram as well, isn't he? He's a great gardener.
That's right, yes.
What's so lovely is that show has sort of launched the two of you, hasn't it?
Yes.
In a way, it's given you that. And I'm just so disappointed that they didn't carry it on, because I think we could have done with that last year,
yes,
couldn't we?
I think they could have carried on. It would have been a nicer thing, maybe tweaked it every here and there. I think there was a lot of issues with growing certain things, or the timing, or where they were coming from and where the location was. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. I don't know why it stopped. But I think it would have been really good.
Yeah.
Just kept tweaking it just a little bit, because a lot of people were interested in that show.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. So you're doing your RHS training. Are you doing that online, or what's the situation with that?
Well, that and COVID, hey, you know, I've got last 4 weeks to go on my RHS. I'm doing the practical now. So I've done the two written theory exams. So I've got through that. And now it's just the last bit of the practical side, and trying to do practical online is fun, really fun. You just see the teacher, bless her, she's trying to do things. You think, okay, you know, we're not getting anywhere here, are we?
Oh,
so some of us who do know what she's talking about, so say it was hardwood cutting the other day, we know what she's talking about, but there's others who have never done it. And when it's a practical course, it's really good to watch someone do it. You might learn something else in a tip. You know, there'll be something about just the potting compost, what sort you should use. You learn little tips from there, even though you're a good gardener. And there are others who have never done it before, and that you could see it on their face, and you think, oh God, poor things, you know, they really don't know what they need to look for, because we've been asked to do it ourselves, and I know what I'm going to do, but they don't know what they're going to do. So it's COVID is really not helping a lot of us, you know.
No, because I used to teach that qualification, but I had one day where it was practical for a group, mm-hmm. and then another I did as an evening course, mm-hmm. and it was a totally different experience for the students. I think the hands-on, showing people handling material, is absolutely key. And I used to take boxes and boxes of plant material into this classroom for the evening course, and I think the sort of the university janitor wasn't very pleased with me when I left, because
leaves everywhere.
Yes, compost, because it's just, there's nothing like giving it a go, is there?
No, I mean, though the theory is nice to do, I think it's also good practice to finish the whole level two with a practical. It just completes the whole thing you've learned, the plant science, the managing of plants. It just completes the whole thing. And I think I'm glad I've done it, because there are so many points I've picked up in there that I wouldn't have done.
No, exactly.
And it's not in books. Yeah, it's not in books. And the experience from the teacher is really, really vital.
Yeah, you'll never regret doing that.
No.
But going back to practical on your plot, what's your essential kit list? I mean, are there things that you think, gosh, I could not be without the greenhouse? For example, your greenhouse on Gardeners World looked like it was made out of our windows. It was fantastic.
That is actually my neighbours. They just recently gave up the plot. Well, they wanted to give up the plot, but they wanted to keep it at the same time.
Right.
So they asked, and I said, look, I don't mind taking it on, because I know I want to go further. At that time, I had already said to Gardeners World that I was going to write for them. So I knew I needed more space to grow things in. So I took on their half plot, and the half plot comes with that greenhouse.
It's great, isn't it?
And he made it. He and another gentleman made that. They salvaged a lot of windows and doors, and they made it.
It's brilliant. And do you have a heated greenhouse there or not?
No, there's no heating on the allotment. It's all unheated greenhouses.
Okay, so what kind of challenges does that bring? I mean, if you had a heated greenhouse, I would imagine you'd be...
I'd live there.
I know, you'd be going mad in there.
I wouldn't be at home.
Yeah, so that is something I suppose you aspire to having, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. My own heated greenhouse in the back garden. Oh, that'd be heaven.
Oh, well, there's your thing to work for.
Yeah. More land.
Yes. When it comes to tools and feeds, what are your sort of things that you think, right, I can't live without that?
When it comes to tools, have good tools. You know, just spend a little bit of money. And I know we can get a tool from a cheap place and say, right, that'll do. But have a really good, say, a hand fork, a spade. Two things I would not be without. I dig, you know, I'd love to go no dig, but I dig at the moment, and make my own compost. I think that is something every garden should learn to do. When I say garden, I mean in your back garden or in your allotment, have that compost bin, because it is vital to put whatever you've taken out of that soil is vital to put it back into the soil. You just need to help the soil, rather than having to buy things in. So a compost bin is the first thing that we made on our plot. It had to be there. So while we were clearing it up, whatever we were clearing went into the compost bin. So nothing's ever left that place.
Brilliant.
And that's one thing I would say is vital to a garden. And personally, I think make your own feeds as well is another good thing. I wouldn't be without my comfrey plant.
Well, I read on one of your blogs a while back that you put comfrey leaves underneath some plants. So I've never heard that before. And I've got lots of comfrey, so I was really interested in that. Rather than making stinky feed.
Exactly. I mean, people will not like stinky feed. That's the last thing. I can never get around to it, but it's that smell that never leaves your nose. for it really 3-4 days, right?
It's awful.
Right. So what I do is it's the same concept. You're just using taking the leaves and burying them, and they'll rot in their own time. And as they rot, the roots are taking up what they're rotting.
I much prefer that idea rather than a peg on your nose and
yeah, and hands. Your hands. Don't forget the hands.
Oh, but that's that sounds sensible.
That's something I use. That is a method I use for my tomatoes and my potatoes. They get a whole load of leaves underneath before I plant the tomatoes outdoors.
Gosh, I will be trying that. So even if you're growing in a container, just put a layer of the leaves.
Container, yeah. So put a layer of soil, of compost, a layer of comfrey leaves, and then just your normal compost on top of it. So as the roots go down in time, when they really need that feed, the leaves have already rotted down for you, and it's doing the job.
Fantastic. I think that's a diamond tip, that is. That really is.
So that's how I do my potatoes and tomatoes. So when you do see my tomatoes, that's what I've done to them.
It's unbelievably easier, isn't it? Yeah. That's what we've got to do, is make it easy. And
that's,
I think,
right.
That's what comes across in your blogs, is that you don't stick to the rules. I know you're learning through the RHS, but you just think, well, I'm going to try this. That doesn't make any sense. And that is actually what gardening's about, isn't it?
That's
trying
right.
things. Now, on the allotment, I was just intrigued. I haven't had an allotment. What the atmosphere's been on the allotment this year. Has it been a place that has just saved you from feeling fed up? Or what's it been like?
It's been a lifeline to me, I think, and to everyone on the plot. Though we couldn't go near each other, we could shout at each other, and that, at least that... we could do.
What were you saying? My carrots are better than yours.
Yeah, you know, and you shout to the whole allotment, and if depending on the wind direction, the whole allotment would hear you, you know. And it's that's the nice part of it, that you were still part of the community. Though you were apart, you were still there together, and I could leave my house and go out.
Yes.
I think there's a lot of this thing about staying in. I know we need to stay in, but I was very careful. I can walk to my allotment, but I chose to drive just to make sure that I wasn't coming in contact with a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that was the best thing that helped me be outdoors and then come back in. I was able to switch off and switch on again. Whereas if I'm indoors, I don't think I could have, I'd be scratching the walls.
Yeah.
I do feel for those people who have had to stay in, and how they've done it, I don't know. Because I really couldn't do it. I think I would put, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I take my hat off to anyone that's had to do that. But I mean, fortunately, there are things you can grow from home indoors, aren't there?
Yes.
If you're desperate. So let's give people that are stuck inside, what can they grow on their windowsill and cook with? I mean, I take it things like basil, herbs. But what would be your sort of go-to plants?
There's one that we grew, and it's in the Gardener's World magazine. It's called the Malabar spinach.
Ooh, sounds lovely.
And that can be grown indoors.
Yes.
It's a vine, so it can go crazy. So you don't need too many plants. You only need one plant, and from that plant, you can even take cuttings and carry on growing them. So it's a wonderful, wonderful little plant. It's not a spinach at all. I've forgotten what family it's in, but it's not a spinach, but it's used as a spinach. The other things you can do is, as I mentioned, the gingers and the turmerics, you can grow that indoors.
And they look like a lovely house plant, actually, don't they?
Exactly. So you can look after it as a house plant as well as grow it to eat. The other thing you can grow is lemongrass. That's another thing you can grow indoors. So you can buy from the supermarket those lemongrass stalks that you see.
Yeah.
Get them rooted and off you go.
So I think it would be worthwhile, if you are at home, isn't it? Just to give it a go. You've got nothing to lose, have you?
You've got nothing to lose. Absolutely nothing to lose. Even if you say, pick up a packet of peas, you know, the dried peas that you get on the supermarket shelf?
Yeah.
That you can make mushy peas with. Grow those and you can make pea shoots. Use them as pea shoots. So you don't have to buy seeds themselves. You can just pick up certain things and grow those, and it'll be amazing what you can find in the supermarket, and just, you know, experiment.
Great fun for kids as well, isn't it? Really good fun. Now, talking of seed, you're a guardian for Ryton Heritage Seed.
Yes.
So explain what that's all about, how you've got involved with that.
Okay. That, I will say, is from my friend Rob. He's the one who's got me into heritage veg. And that's how I learned about how to save seeds. I mean, I've saved seeds before, but not on the level that I do now. It's all about trying to keep heritage seeds or Ryton seeds. The library wants you to learn to do something and do it for yourself. It's not for them. They're not doing it for you to pass it back to them. They want you to learn and pass on that tradition, because it is a tradition. We used to do it before. It's all lost because seed companies come along and, you know, we love them because they do it for us.
Yes, easy.
So what it is with the seed guardian job is you get a variety of seeds. Could be tomatoes, could be beans. It all depends what they want to do this year. I don't know what it is for this year. For last year, it was beans. So we have about 10 seeds. We grow them in isolation, so they shouldn't be next to any other beans at all.
Okay.
So if you have the space, that's how you do it. So I tend to grow them at home because I don't grow any vegetables at home. So I know they won't get cross-pollinated with other beans.
Yep.
And you collect all the seeds, grate them, check everything. But you have to keep notes of what's happening to the plants, how tall they are, when did it flower, how long the fruit is. And, you know, all the details. Just have little notes. And then you send all the seeds back. You can keep a few, okay, but you send them all back. So we're just increasing the library.
And they will then pass them on to other people.
That's right. So until they've got a bigger batch, then they can send it to all the other people that who have joined the library. But as a seed guardian, that's a totally different, I wouldn't say job, but it's something that you want to do and save seeds.
It's like a lovely living chain letter, isn't it? You know, like you used to get those.
Well, nice way of putting it.
It's really nice, isn't it, that it passes around. Oh, well done. That sounds fascinating, actually.
But they only give this position if you've been doing it for a while.
Okay.
So you have to prove to them that you've been doing this and you know how to do it. You have to learn to know things shouldn't be cross-pollinated, because then that defeats the object of saving seeds off that variety of a very lost, you know, some of these are lost varieties that they've been trying to save as much as possible.
Gosh, it's important work, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, very important.
There's a lot of on your shoulders. You know, you really have to take this on and say, no, I can do it. And that's what they look for. They won't just give this position to anybody. You really have to prove for a few years that you've been doing it, and then you apply.
Yeah.
And then they'll say, okay, yes or no.
Okay. So you mustn't sort of go away for 4 weeks and let them die on you.
No. That's the last thing. You cannot have a summer holiday, okay? That's what I'll say to you now.
I was going to say, it's quite dedicated.
I do not have summer holidays. My summer holiday's on the allotment.
Actually, something that I really wanted to ask you is, in the garden that I look after with my uncles, we never water anything in the ground because we just don't have enough water. We're on a spring system.
Mm-hmm.
So none of our veg is ever watered, and it's always fine. You know, it just sort of gets its roots down. What's your theory on watering? I always think people water too little too often and it just doesn't do anything.
Too little too often is completely, that's a no-no. Because you're not helping the plant and you're not helping the ground either. Neither is getting the sufficiency that it needs. If you water well and water to the roots, you know, sprinklers is great, but it's not doing the plant any good because it's the roots that need it, not the plant.
Yeah.
So directly watering to the plant is so much better. You could be going up and down with a watering can. I'd rather do that than hold a hose. It's that important that you need to just give enough water once a week, if that, and they'll be fine. It'd be amazing how much water's in that ground, even on a really hot sunny day. If you just dig down a little bit, you'll see how much water's underneath. And that actually helps the plant better because they're anchoring so much better underneath.
Oh, I'm glad you agree with that.
I do agree with that. I find a lot of people say, right, I need to water 2 times a day. It all depends what it is as well. It depends what vegetables you're growing. So something like lettuce will need damp soil all the time. So, you know, you're looking at 2 different crops. Corn can do without water for a whole week.
Yes.
So you really have to think which is the priority, which plants are the priority, and you just go and do those. And we have lovely summers, don't we? We have so much rain in the summer, so we don't have to worry.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why we give it a second thought, quite frankly. She says, squelching around the garden. Oh, dear. Now, something else that I really wanted to talk to you about that I was intrigued to find out about is marmalade.
Ah, yeah.
Because my mother is a fanatical marmalade maker. There's a competition, some awards that you enter.
Yeah.
Tell me more, because there's still time for people to enter this year.
There is, and I've actually just done my copy. I've just downloaded my copy for entering. So that's...
Oh, brilliant.
It's just something I thought, that's one part... All right, we're in January. Nothing to do, she says. There's plenty to do, but there's nothing to do. There's nothing that's... interesting me, you know, I need some colour, and marmalade's something. I always thought, whoa, I need to make marmalade. And this was 3 years ago. I said, oh, let me make marmalade. This was, I think, middle of summer. Seville marmalade, I need to make some. And little did I know when I get oranges, Seville oranges. And I thought, okay, you don't get them until January, dear. So you have to wait. This is something I learned. I never knew that. Because you find oranges all the time. But then Seville are particular, you only get them in.
Yeah, and they're hard to get, actually. Yes. You've got to be on the ball, haven't you, to get them?
Well, I've been going to Waitrose, because that's my nearest place where I get this particular brand, this organic brand that I get.
Yeah.
I've been going every day. I think they must think I'm silly just going there, just checking and coming back again.
You know? No, we've done that for my mother. Don't you worry. I know what that's about.
Yeah, so this competition, it's actually a competition that is for a charity. So it's not just for, it's for fun, but it's all about getting money for a hospice. It's called Hospice at Home.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that, and I entered it as a laugh, as I do, just challenge myself. And it's something you can take part in. Anyone can take part.
But I'd like to reiterate that you're not competitive.
I am so not competitive. Not at all. I just did it for fun. Seriously, the first time I did it, it was for fun. Because I wanted to challenge myself, can I make marmalade? That was my first goal. And you know how Google follows you? It threw up this competition at me. I don't know what I was doing. It came up and I thought, oh, there's actually even a competition. I looked into that.
I'm in.
Shall I do it? I'm in.
Yes.
And that was it. And I never thought that mine would come up with an award. I was gobsmacked. So 2 years in a row, I got an award. I thought, oh. And last year, I missed last year because we were away at the time. And when we came back, I missed the dates. I just don't know what happened with the dates. I thought, oh, never mind. So I had a lot of marmalade, and a lot of people did enjoy the marmalade.
That's brilliant. So it's called the World's Original Marmalade Awards, am I right?
That's right, yeah.
And you've got till the 10th of February, everyone. So let's give Rekha some real competition this
competition,
year.
Competition, please. But if it's your first time, you have to enter in the first time as marmalade.
Right, okay. Oh, so you're in the clear.
Yes,
you're
I'm
all right.
In the clear. I can't enter that one again.
Oh, dear. But I mean, I love all these little quirky things that happen in life. And it's... You know, who would have thought that there was a World's Marmalade Awards? It's just brilliant.
And even if you don't enter it, just have a look at their site. It's amazing. The amazing kind of jars and types that you could... I would never would have put whiskey in my marmalade, but you can put whiskey in your marmalade. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I thought, maybe I might try that one.
Yeah.
It's there is so much to it, and you can have a marmalade twist of adding anything else. So you can even put saffron into it.
Oh, I love that.
There's so many different things you could do, but that's marmalade, and that's another competition, another challenge.
Yeah, I thought that was great fun. So just before we end off, really, I wanted to talk to you about the value of allotments generally, because there's obviously more people than ever wanting them.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to constantly be at risk, and they're being developed.
Yeah.
I don't know what we can do about it, but it is very troubling, isn't it, that we might lose more as the years go by.
I think there will be a point where we will really, really have to challenge the government or whoever it is, the developers, that it may be land that is used over the summer the most, but there is a community that it brings. It makes community. There is so many people that find an allotment as a haven, just to go and sit there whether it's full of weeds, it's your plot that is full of weeds, but it's yours and it's your mental health that really is, how can I say, you achieve well from just being outdoors. There's just 5 minutes of being outside and 5 minutes being indoors. You'll know the difference. You know, it's the fresh air that you get, but it's the community. I think it's more about the community. It's not about what you grow or how much you'll have to grow. It's about helping each other. And you'll be amazed how many people have helped me challenge myself and I've helped them challenge themselves. You won't even know when that happens. It just seems to happen. And it's a community that looks after each other. So right now in COVID, what we're doing is if I haven't seen somebody while I just walk by my plot, I'll ring them up. And you'd be surprised when you hear, oh, I'm so glad you spoke to me because I was feeling so down and I'm glad you called. And that's a nice feeling. I think a lot of people get a really nice sentiment that someone's cared for them.
And I think, you know, any amount of therapy, there's going to be a lot of people with mental health issues after all this. Oh. Any amount of therapy can't beat what you're doing, you know, what an allotment gives you. It's physical, it's friendship, it's taste, it's joy, it's just, that's what I think we've all got to bring to the table when they're at risk, isn't it?
Yes, it's not about what you grow. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not about what you're growing. It's about everything else that is brought by an allotment, by a green space. It brings people together. And if you have a problem, you'd be amazed that if you just mention it to somebody, someone else will have an answer to that. Mm. And it's just lightens the load. It's mental health is the one thing that you can never see.
Yes.
And you can't just cure it just like that. It's some people are good that they'll recover, but there is so many people who I know are suffering, and it's not the nicest time at the moment. And January is the worst time I feel, because it's finished with the Christmas and now you're into a month that how can you pick yourself up?
Yeah.
An allotment is one place you can just go. And even if you don't do anything, it's just the joy of the greenery brings your mind at peace.
And soon you'll be sowing chilies, won't you? So that'll give you...
I've actually started.
Have you? Oh, gosh, you're ahead of the game.
I shouldn't have. I start today, but I couldn't help it.
She wants to get ahead of all the others. So
I couldn't help it.
Well, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. And I highly recommend that people dive onto your blog, because it's just... What I love is you do a recipe and then at the end you put enjoy, kiss. I think, oh, this is great. It's just very unpretentious. It's very doable. So thank you for that. And yeah, I hope we see a lot more of you, and I'm sure we will. And that you...
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes I like to just go back into my little hole. But yeah, you'll see me. You'll see me on the blog. You'll see me on the Instagram.
Good.
And there's a lot more to come from me. So that's all I'm going to say to you.
Fantastic.
You know, say to you
that's
all.
Brilliant.
There's a lot more that will come out this year.
Very exciting. Well, thank you very much, Rekha.
No, thank you, Tamsin.
Well, I hope that Rekha has inspired you as much as she's inspired me. I'm going to dive headlong into the seed catalogues yet again. But I think what was so lovely, actually, was how we ended with the value, talking about the value of allotments and how important they are. So if you have one, make the most of it. If you don't, maybe sign up. And I think as we all drive past them, walk past them, cycle past them, we need to take an admiring glance and think, thank goodness for the allotment.